This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, midweek Wednesday afternoon, September 3rd. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. There's a rise in the number of scams aimed at pet owners. We'll talk to the head of the Better Business Bureau of Chicago in our next segment. But right now, new numbers show 3 out of 4 workers say they plan to earn income in retirement, but history shows far fewer actually do once benefits and savings kick in. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago. Rick, thank you for joining us today. This new survey finds 75% of Americans plan to work in retirement. And does the plan actually meet reality?
No, it doesn't. And that's because the transition from retirement to back to work, or the idea of actually finding something that makes sense for you, is more of a challenge than we're willing to own. You know, the job that you had while you were working, it's not necessarily very likely that you're going to keep that job or have something at the same level. And you also have a lot of incentives. You know, there's a lot of friction against that because you have a lot of incentives to do other things because you are of an age where you have retirement, you have more money than you had disposable income, at least in the past.
Yeah, it sounds like it's more of a mindset thing, that when you are staring down retirement and you're actually ready to hang up the gone fishing sign for good, you can't really envision just not doing anything. And then you actually are retired and you say to yourself, I really like traveling. I really like babysitting the grandkids. I really like doing X, Y, and Z. And even though I want to continue working in some form or fashion, I don't necessarily have to.
I think you've hit on the key. You know, it's not typically, I worked with clients for over 3 decades who were transitioning from one job to the next, and many of them had the ability to retire financially. The challenge is retirement is not typically only about money. It's about feeling relevant. It's about feeling engaged, that you matter. There's a very famous study back in the 70s where the Russians studied these septuagenarians that were living to 120 up in the Georgian mountains, and that's why yogurt became so popular. Well, what they really discovered is they bring these people down from the mountains and put them in these labs and start to examine them. Well, in their village, they were active, they were sought for advice, they were the elders of the village and mattered. And down in Moscow, they were just lab rats. We need to feel engaged, and those that want to have an effective and pleasurable retirement need to have social engagement and something that they feel good about doing. And if it's grandkids, great. I can tell you there's a lot of people that think they're going to become a great golfer that find out about 3 months into it that they aren't, and that's a disappointment.
And well, the other thing too, outside of just, you know, if you're retired, you have other things to do with your life just outside of being a grandparent if you have grandkids. It seems like a lot of the people I know who have since retired and thought they were going to, you know, keep their feet in the working world somehow ended up, they still worked, but it was volunteer work in causes that meant something to them.
Sure. And that's a very common part of the evolution as you go through the different ages. And at the end of your life, towards the end of your life, you do want to actualize yourself. You want to feel better about your contribution. You have less time and you want to make a difference. And you recognize either consciously or subconsciously that, you know, your net worth on your tombstone isn't going to mean much to anybody.
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, pet owners need to be on alert as scammers increasingly target them.
You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The Better Business Bureau is warning of a resurgence in pet scams. We welcome in Steve Burness, president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Chicago. Steve, thank you for joining us today. And pet scams, like all other scams, seem to come in cycles. They're really prominent and you see them everywhere and then they fade away. And once again, pet scams are on the rise, according to your scam tracker. And what is the most common form of pet scam that's surfacing these days?
Well, thank you so much for having me today, Rob. Yeah, here's a point. This is a perennial problem. It happens all the time, but there's always a surge around the holiday season that's coming up as well. Basically, what happens is these criminals, you know, post fake online ads for non-existent pets that really trick the buyers into sending money. So what we're seeing the most is that you got these offers, too good to be true, reduced price, or I've got to move, I'm in the military, we have these dogs for you, and they ask you to send an advance fee. And that's what we call the tip-off to the rip-off, is that they want these fees, and they'll keep asking for additional fees until you catch on that it is a scam. So what I mean by that, they'll say that you need the airlines requesting a better position for this dog, or a better crate, or they need to see a doctor before we can send them. So it's best to meet the dog breeder itself. And the problem is, when people go online, they see all these ads. About 80% of these sponsored ads are somewhat fake, in essence, of buying a pet. So that's the problems we're seeing, Rob.
And it seems like if you cannot meet the person making the offer on a face-to-face basis because they are far away, maybe it's a good idea to do a reverse Google image search on the picture of the pet they are sending to you.
It happens all the time. You could use that on a picture of a pet or a person itself. You could do a reverse Google search. You go into Google search and reverse, use your right click, and you could reverse it. And you could see that that dog or that cat or other animal is on other websites. They kind of use the cutest dog they can, the cuddliest ones, and they use it as a bait to get you to think that these dogs are available when actually they have no dogs to be available or cats. They just want your credit card information, or sometimes they want you to wire money, unconventional payment methods using bitcoins. We've seen so many types of these scams. It's best, as you mentioned, is to meet them in person. And locally, you've got the local rescue places or animal shelters that you can go to without going online, getting it from a source that you know nothing of, Rob.
And then do pet scams really take off as we approach the holidays? Because we are getting close to the end of the year, and it seems like pet scammers could do really brisk business off of people who want to surprise their family with the perfect pet under the tree on Christmas morning, and their desire to fulfill that surprise overrides whatever common sense they may have.
Exactly. Around the holiday season, it always increases. We will issue our warnings as it gets closer. But again, they're trying to bank on you not doing any research on them. And then basically, you're trying to get it ahead of time before the crowds, before the Christmas time. So they say, you can hold this dog, or you can hold this one. We'll hold it for you. And in essence, they have no animal as well. But again, it's a perennial problem. But as you mentioned, especially around the holiday season, if they want you to send money in advance, that's the tip off to the rip off, Rob.
Steve Burness, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, Macy's is enjoying an increase in sales, while holiday sales are expected to drop this year.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Macy's turnaround is underway, and Wall Street appears to like it, while holiday spending faces some headwinds, with Gen Z shoppers expected to cut back this year. Joining us to break it all down is Bob Phibbs, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York. Find him online, theretaildoc.com. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And this was not planned, but yesterday on the program, we talked to the owner of a small department store in Chicago, a boutique that was taking a lot of inspiration from the old Marshall Fields. And so today we will talk about the Marshall Field successor, Macy's, which is currently set up on State Street in Chicago and many other thoroughfares across North America. And it seems like Wall Street likes what Macy's is selling these days.
Hey, they had their biggest increase in sales in 3 years, and the stock is up about 20%. Tony Spring, the CEO, has lots to crow about, especially after having activist investors saying, you know, retail's no good and let's sell it up for its real estate. And Tony has been very laser focused, and he deserves all the credit because he was the one that changed Macy's fortunes.
You know, I feel like on my nearly 10 years on this program, we have talked about the death of retail and then the rebirth of retail so many times that if I got a dollar for each time we talked about the death of retail, I could retire. And so what is it about the Macy's game plan these days that has it well positioned for the second quarter of the 21st century?
Well, I think they're multi-brand, multi-category retailer. The other thing that was interesting in their data was that they're attracting more affluent customers, which, again, we heard, was it last week? Walmart is attracting all these affluent customers. They're all trading down. Well, not necessarily. They're going to Bloomingdale's and they're going to Macy's pretty well. So ultimately, the death of retail has been over-exaggerated because still 80% of people are going to buy something that they discover in a store. That's why they go to a store to find out what's new. You go online usually to replace something you already know and that kind of thing. But it bodes very well for it. And even with, you alluded to the drop in shopping, I guess there was a little poll that said Gen Z is, you know, planning to spend 25% less this holiday. Well, that's great. But the reality is the tariffs are going to be kicking in here in the next few weeks. And it'll be interesting to see how people report sales, because that'll be figured in as sales numbers. No one's going to say if you took out tariffs. So I think we're going to see retail numbers for the rest of the year are going to be going up. But at the end of the day, the shopper is the one who decides it all. So get out there and get out your charge cards and keep Macy's and the rest of us going, because retail is still the engine that drives one in four jobs in America.
Well, let's talk very briefly about this Gen Z survey where they say they're going to spend 23% less compared to the last holiday season. And it seems like you and I should reconvene in January to see if they actually hold true to their convictions, or if they decide to either stay even with last year or potentially spend more.
Well, the challenge always is this is an online survey. No, it's their thought about it, right? And we all know that a lot of times people say one thing and do another, and that certainly is true. So whether we'll get a breakdown by Gen Z, it's kind of doubtful, but it makes news. And, you know, at the end of the day, of course, everybody thinks they're going to spend less because it's a lot of uncertainty in the market. But when you really get down to it, you know, we talk about holiday sales. There's candy and things that people buy in October that they think they're going to have for Christmas, and then they buy several times, or those unexpected gifts. So I think in all, we're going to have a decent holiday, pending, you know, not having more trauma to the economic system. But Macy's is a great bellwether, because what it's telling everybody is brick and mortar stores certainly have an omnichannel strategy, is helpful, but a name brand like Macy's still is the gold standard to look at.
Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. Markets are mixed this afternoon. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond, Indiana. Find him online, horizoninvestment.com. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. Now, the NASDAQ is really rocking and rolling today, up nearly 1%, and that, it sounds like the NASDAQ's gains today are strictly off of a court case that came down yesterday.
Well, that's right. In the case of Alphabet, most people know it as Google, they had been involved in an antitrust case, and the rulings came down that the remedies weren't nearly as bad as people thought they might be, and thus you're seeing a really nice relief rally in Alphabet. It's up almost 9% today. And what that's doing is kind of sending kind of positive vibes through the rest of the tech sector. I mean, a number of tech companies are facing, you know, regulatory headwinds, and this is kind of news that's not just good for Alphabet, but is potentially good for some of those other companies that were facing potential antitrust monopolistic practices by regulators. So you're getting a nice move in a lot of tech stocks, and that obviously helps the tech-heavy NASDAQ today.
And then if the courts ruled against Google, how much of a tectonic shift would that have represented in the tech sector? Would that have been nearly as monumental as the government action against Microsoft 25 years ago?
Well, it might have actually been more so because of the dependency on the markets right now on technology and technology stocks and all the market cap that's in those stocks, and they make up, the top 10 stocks in the S&P 500, I think, make up almost 40% of the index, and most of those stocks are tech stocks. So it would have probably had even more significant ramifications, obviously not just for Alphabet, but for, again, some of these other companies that potentially are facing some regulatory headwinds as well.
Meanwhile, the Dow continues to sell off just a little bit. It's down about 0.5% right now, give or take. And is that just simply a function of investors once again waking up and noticing that the calendar reads September?
Well, I think that's it. I think it's also the fact that, you know, the Dow doesn't have some of these technology stocks in it that are doing very well today. I mean, and you can kind of look at that in the S&P 500, which actually is up about a third of a percent today. Again, not as much as the NASDAQ, but that's still pretty heavy tech representation that you're not seeing in the Dow, and hence, that being down almost 0.5%. The other factor, too, is, you've got money moving into it today, from a trading standpoint. You've got, this is a move money into tech day and take it out of somewhere, and they're taking it out of some of the stocks that are prominent in the Dow, some of the consumer staples, et cetera. So, I think it's just kind of one of those daily rotations, but this probably will cause a little bit more of a sustained rotation back into tech. This is pretty good news for the tech sector in general.
Tomorrow and Friday are two big days when it comes to whether or not the Fed will cut interest rates later this month, because we get the two job numbers. The private payroll report, I guess that's just a topic of conversation that we'll discuss tomorrow. And then, of course, the government jobs report comes out on Friday morning. But if the if those figures for August come in either in line with expectations or slightly below, that probably opens the door and almost it turns a rate cut in September into a slam dunk if it wasn't already there already.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the market thinks it's pretty much a done deal, and that kind of news of a disappointment in the jobs number, I think, would seal the deal there for a rate cut. So we'll wait and see. The jobs market is really significant from the Fed standpoint, because if you look at just other areas of the economy, you had second quarter profits were coming off what were some of the best profits since 2022. This typically isn't an environment where you would see the Fed cut rates. So that jobs number really holds a lot of import for the Fed in terms of giving them some leeway to cut rates. So, Friday's report is going to be significant.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond. Thank you for joining us today.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday, sponsored by Consumers Credit Union. Thank you for joining us on the program. First-time investors often stumble by chasing hype, ignoring diversification, or panicking during downturns. Let's get insight from Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview. Find him online. SenecalCapital.com. Bill, thank you for joining us today. And there's we live in a time, Bill, when you have a lot of information available to you, and that is both a blessing and a curse. And I say this because, as a result of my job as the host of the Noon Business Hour, the social media algorithm, whether it's Instagram or Threads, sends me a lot of financial advice accounts. And I would imagine if you are a professional and it sends you professional financial advice accounts, maybe your ears would start to bleed, because some of the advice they pass along is pretty bad. And if you're trying to just jump into the world of investing the first time, your head just may be spinning with all the facts and information available to you.
100%. It's not couched as financial advice. It's designed to be quote unquote education. But everybody knows if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck, right? It's financial advice, even though they try to disclaim it away. So I think the most important thing, Rob, of all the common mistakes that people are making, is that you have to check your emotion. And I tell clients, I tell prospects, like, this is a game not of numbers, it's a game of emotion. And you have to dollar cost average, and make it boring. Make it as boring as possible, right? Dollar cost average instead of the fear of missing out. You don't want to chase hot tips. You don't want to chase all the wins that your friends are making, because it always feels like you're falling behind. It seems like everybody's making money in the stock market except you. So you have to check in with those feelings and check in with the emotion and just realize that investing really has to be boring if it's going to be successful. The second thing I tell people is like penny stocks. Like, we're all guilty of buying penny stocks or like lottery tickets. We hope we can catch up for the problems that we had in terms of our investment success, where we think we should be. We have to make sure that we don't do too much overinvesting, like, you know, taking out too much in margin or a home equity loan to buy Bitcoin. Like, don't do that. Okay. We want to avoid overreaching and overstretching. And honestly, if you don't really like investment, if you don't like to read about investments, I tell our prospects and our clients, it's okay to want to do this. I mean, everybody feels like they should be responsible and understand things about their portfolio and investing and values and interest rate. Like, it's okay if you don't care about that. Just be an index investor. That's all you need to do. I mean, we're a registered investment advisory firm, and even I barely trade stocks. I'm not a good stock picker, but I'm a good ETF and a good sector picker. So you have to just focus on your strong points. And I think those are things that people just need to do, is build on your strength. And it's okay if you're not like Warren Buffett. It's all good.
Yeah, really. It's just a matter of time horizons and letting the compounding interest do the work for you. And you point out that if you're interested in the sector and you're interested in ETFs, there are more exchange traded funds available to you these days than there are individual stocks. I read that recently. So if you just want to be exposed to certain sectors and you have, and you're just interested in what have you, that's available to you today.
Yes. And honestly, I've read, you know, 1,000 books on investing and trading, and there's only one book I would recommend to anybody, and that's a book called it's by Nick Murray. It's about inevitable wealth. Like, there's just no way you can screw this up if you just focus on asset classes, you put your head down, you dollar cost average, and you reverse the numbers. Like, we know that the Russell 2000 or the NASDAQ or the S&P provide, in general, X percent rate of return annually. Well, you take what your goal is, figure out where you're starting from, and just, you already know what the rate of return is. I mean, in general, it's a crooked line, but it works. And again, like, you can't get your emotions involved with all this. Nobody has the text message, the phone number for Jerome Powell. We can't text Scott Bessent, in the middle of the night to see what's going on. We don't need to know that. We just need to control our emotions. It feels greedy when the fear and greed index is high. We feel like, hey, we can just maybe back to where we were a few. Like, that's not greedy. That's just like hope. And so you got to, but everybody feels fear. It's just that nobody feels greedy. So here we are with the PE ratios at incredible highs. Valuations of the NASDAQ to the average investor is ridiculously high. Everybody's talking about artificial intelligence. Well, you know what? Maybe this is not a time to swing for the fences in some technology stuff and be diversified, as you say. Super important.
Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview, thank you for joining us today on this Personal Finance Wednesday.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Always assume your employer is watching, from websites you visit to office behavior and snack stash grabs. Missteps rarely go unnoticed. Joining us to discuss is Jason Wachtel, Managing Partner, J.W. Michaels & Company in Chicago. Jason, thank you for joining us today, and I think the average employee would probably be shocked to find out how much their employer actually knows about them based on their daily activities in the office.
Yeah, 100%. I would think most employers these days have technology on your computers, cameras sometimes in the office, so they know every site that you're on, when you're working, when you're on social media, depending on your key security access, when you leave the office, when you don't leave the office. So it's very important when you're working to be knowledgeable that people are watching you.
And on top of that, you have to establish good habits, because I have been in situations where if your badge hit the door 2 minutes after you were supposed to be there. Sometimes they'll tell you that. And if you're spending way too much time on Facebook, we had a general manager at another radio station here in town who was watching all of that activity like a hawk. So it's once you're inside the door of your workplace and they're paying for you, you have to play by their rules.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most employers, when they get a screenshot or the information or access to what you're doing on your computer. So if they're running activity report and they see from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock you're on ESPN or another website, you can get terminated for that. In fact, I heard of a company recently where people got caught stealing egg sandwiches, an executive, and he got terminated. So every little thing you do is being watched, and depending on how aggressive your employer is, you know, don't be surprised if one day they say, "What are you doing at work today?" Because it seems like you're doing absolutely nothing.
Now, how much of your, I mean, obviously, once your badge hits the door when you come in, up until the time your badge hits the door when you leave, you are working for the organization that's paying you. But how much off-site stuff becomes the responsibility of your employer, whether it's social media posting or even your social media activity? If you look like you're very obviously angling for a new job on LinkedIn, is that your employer's responsibility? Are you accountable to them?
I have seen incidences at JW Michaels where we've had candidates angle on social media or post something maybe that is controversial on social media, and they've lost their job the following day. So you have to be cognizant that you have a job, that even if you're looking for a job, if you're on LinkedIn, for example, you can't make it so obvious you're looking to make a move because your employer is probably on LinkedIn as well, and if they see some weird activity, they're going to call you out on it, and you've got to be prepared that you might lose your job for that.
Jason Wachtel, Managing Partner, JW Michaels & Company in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.